S-H-A. This is the Shaman's Den on Fake Radio. Here every Sunday, 10 p.m. H-I-H-O. Home of F-R. Free speech and P-E-R, personal, M-N, non-linear, R-A, radio, I have a guest, but before I begin, before I forget, N-E, next week, the B E R Berkeley P O R P O E poet and musician Barb Golden will probably be here. The Berkeley poet and musician Barb Golden will probably be here next week's Shaman's Den show. And don't forget on November 29th. Get someone to listen and watch the Shaman's Den show with you, because there's going to be the first interactive Aeroplay ritual with the help of Art Long and the Art Cam gang of Suze and Mimi. That's November 29th. So get a comfortable mat and someone and P. P L A and play A L play along. I L U L I S listened all night last night to Fake Radio. G, great shows. S H O, great show. Hip Dad. And I L I L O love the S H O the show B by the E evil S the evils. They know that R E that reminds me. The C H E the check will be in the M A in the mail, evil clown. G great R O A R O A S great roast of me. I and what you said, about our H hot links in on E R aeroplay.com should get a lot of hits to our site. S. No. N. O. Now. For. The. Mikey, is the cam on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Chero cam is on. aeroplay.com/webcam.html. Okay. So now for. I K N O I know this there are a lot of people who all over in the in all L I lines of work who W I wish I was not in the W O R world.
They wish you weren't in the world. Great God, Frank.
W E. Well, we have some one here who they can blame
yeah, come on.
For that. A, if it was not for her, I am might not be here.
Well, you know, Frank, if it wasn't for you, I might not be here now either. You know.
And there are a lot of people who who would be blame me for that too. This is Al
Louise
Scott. What? Say, do you want me to sum up? Whoa. Well, okay,
careful.
I'll say, yeah,
careful
really.
There.
I'll say what I know and you can correct me. T H A thanks. W O thanks was. What did was say? Oh, changing the topic? Mm. Yeah.
He said a little while ago, why wasn't that pretty lady here when I was there?
Waz was visiting us.
I don't.
Waz is one of the DJs.
Uh huh.
He wants to know why that pretty lady, meaning you, was
me.
Here when he was here visiting.
Oh my God. How old is he?
How old are you, Waz? She wants to know that you're calling her a pretty lady.
Thank you, Waz. Thank you.
Did not I P R E P R E P R no, did not I
provide
what?
Provide
you enough pretty ladies. Or an nude pretty ladies was. Yeah, what the heck, Frank? Keeps all the pretty ladies for himself. Was said that Frank keeps all the pretty ladies for himself. Have W E well in A R F E in a few D days the P pretty lady the PR the proof that Frank provided you with nude pretty ladies will be up on our website for the whole world to see. We saved some of the pictures from the webcam when Waz was here dancing nude with Heidi and I, and Mikey's putting them up on the website so everybody can see that Frank did provide him with nude pretty
ladies. All right.
A, as P, as P U, P, no, as P O P U popular demand. By popular demand, those pictures are going up this week. He says he's only interested in them for their minds. the pretty
one. Come on.
We said, come on.
Yeah.
Why is it still trying to come up with the money for the negative? All right, so. U-S-E, use the money to, for, F-A-K, for fake, use that money you're saving for the negative for fake radio. Okay, so I'm going to attempt to tell a brief story of how Frank and Louise hooked up. And you can stop me. Yeah, you can fill in.
I can correct you,
yeah,
or I can.
Fill,
I can
fill
okay.
Stuff in.
Okay, and I'm sure Frank will have a few.
Frank was living at home with his mother and brother, I guess, in San Bernardino County.
Right.
He had made an attempt to leave home at one point and by getting an attendant who turned out to be a drunk who pulled a gun on him. So now he's back living with his mom, aware of the fact that if he doesn't get out of the house soon, he could turn into the Crip son who stays with his mom his whole life. So he was feeling like something had to give. He was toward the end of his college years. Louise was the cool hippie lady that lived in town with on kind of a little farm or something, or some piece of land. Or
we
something.
Had an acre.
An acre.
I had an acre there with a lot of outbuildings and whatnot.
Yeah.
And my previous husband and I had made a swimming pool, and we made a sweat, and we were really into it. We were supporting ourselves. Doing
what?
Landscaping.
Is a sweat?
A hot steam bath. You know, so we could get in there and get real hot and then jump in the cold water and get back out and whatnot. And the first time I remember seeing Frank, was it Sally, what was her name? The folk singer, and we were all at this house. And here's Frank. My God, here's Frank. And I watched him watching people, and I felt like he saw so much more than other people saw, and I felt a little uncomfortable about it, of course. And that was initially, and then I was off after that, off with the hippies.
We
when I came back, I got into a Frank.
Not talk.
No, but I watched, and he was watching. And then that was before I went off with all the hippies, right? And then I was up here in the Haight-Ashbury in Nevada City, and then I left that and went back to San Bernardino, and that's where we came really connected.
W-H-I, while... You were H, while you were G, O, gone some of my friends, F, R, from college,
yeah.
M, O, moved in.
Oh, those guys. Okay. Well, anyways, then when I go back, is when I really got involved with Frank. He would be by and with friends of his and whatnot. And in the meantime, then, shortly after that, I moved to Santa Fe when the big exodus to the country was happening. And I was back trying to sell that piece of property. You want the story about I was crying? I had been very sick, and I was in the bedroom crying one day because I was losing my hair. And I heard someone was there, and I walk in the kitchen, and here is Frank, you know, full of joy and all that. And I just that was when I really felt a real breakthrough with Frank. Mm-hmm. And, like, at that time, mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God, man, I'm out there crying about my vanity, you know, and I felt really bad about it. How could mm-hmm. I be so vain, you know? And a day or two later, he brought me this beautiful painting that he had done of this head. And he said, this is vanity. All gold and curls and earrings and lipstick and this and that. He said, vanity is very beautiful. And then in talking about Santa Fe, he said, oh, I wish I could go there. I said, well, you want to come live with us? Yeah. And so we moved all to Santa Fe with me and my kids.
No.
No.
You did. You did. I M O I M E E No. I W E I went before you
got there. Oh, yeah. A friend, Steve, took him in the car, and then I came with all this furniture and stuff. And maybe I get it wrong, Frank. You know?
U S A, you said, P, it would be, 3, 2, 2 weeks.
How long was it?
Three. No, two. 2 months.
Was it that long? And in the meantime, he was at a place called the Center that was set up at that time, the late 60s, right? The very latest 60s, early 70s.
Early 70s.
Yeah. Every dissident in the United States was on the road, going right through Santa Fe. The word was out there was free land, and this friend of ours who had become a Catholic priest at the time, Father George,
B I F I, first saw him. When he was MCing, he was MC for L-E-E Lee M-I-C-H-A E. Michaels, Lee Michaels. Was this in San Bernardino? Mm. That's the first time you ever saw Father George.
I don't remember Lee Michaels.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I don't remember that. Yeah. But that was away from me. I mean, it wasn't connected with me particularly.
Yeah.
So Frank is here and right in the middle of all these people going all over the world for a couple of months doing just dandy.
My F I first R E A real time on my own.
On his own, right.
So you should describe where, what this, like what it was. I don't think we
called
anybody.
We called it the Center. Yeah. And it was an old nursing home that we rented. It was huge. It had a commercial kitchen, all of that.
And it was you and George that started
That got this started, plus some other people. Yeah. I mean, there were, you know, it was a really joint effort.
Yeah.
Communal effort. But there was one guy in Santa Fe who volunteered to come and help everybody fix a broken down cars. And we had the Chicano Center that were a lot of the Chicano people. That was kind of the first integration there, actually, between gringos and Chicanos happened through there. Oh, there was just everything happened through there, really.
It was like a crash pad.
It was like a crash pad. Stay. People could stay, and we got people to donate produce. Everybody kind of cooked and contributed and whatnot. And this got going there.
And so this
and then I arrived, and then Frank lived with me and my kids because they threw Father George in jail for running a disorderly house or something. I don't remember what they got him on. But I'm real grateful this happened because the amount of pressure that took off of Santa Fe that summer, God knows what would have happened. You know, I mean, kids are making love in the plaza, right, and they're getting thrown in jail, and it was heavy. There was too much all of a sudden happened to Santa Fe. You know, we liberated hippies go there without our brassieres, and that was totally outside of that culture at that time, and there was a huge clash that this prevented.
In fact, they bombed the center.
Yeah, I wasn't there when that happened. That I was still going back and forth trying to sell his house in San Bernardino. See, Frank was there.
Yeah.
Steve got him there.
Yeah.
And then I got there, and we got the house rented, and we got the other situation together.
Yeah.
But most of the initial work at the center I was involved in, but that was before Frank.
Yeah.
And so when Frank got there, and I don't know why I was that long getting there, Frank. I was on my way.
He said that had to settle things with the selling of the house.
Yeah, I never got the house sold. I probably rented it out again. There were problems, you know, government FHA loans and stuff. So I didn't sell it at that time. But Frank was, you know, he was in his glory after being pretty much isolated, although he'd been going to college. I mean, I'm sure he was just having a ball there. You know, it was good for him.
Yeah.
And then he lived with me and my children, and we were still very much a part of this alternate society.
Yeah.
And fully a part of, remember the night in the teepee? Peyote meeting. We dug a hole in the ground so Frank could be propped up, you know, because there's no, you know, everybody's on the floor, on the ground in the teepee.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frank was always ready for anything, whatever it is, he wants to try it. He wants to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was a lot of that type of whatever everybody else was doing, which had started in San Bernardino. You know, you better believe he wants to get in the sweat and get in the pool, you know, and, you know, tough buzzard.
Yeah.
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 So, ask me something. Ask me.
So, did you live with Louise for about a year? You guys lived in the city? Yeah. Okay.
And then, I was real upset. Some people he had met and invited him to go back east to a commune. And I was real worried because his care, as you guys know, can be really kind of heavy.
Yeah.
I was real concerned about this. Frank never acts from fear.
Right.
You know, he goes for it. He goes for the love and forget the fear. But my fears, you know, I've had this maternal kind of thing going about it. And he wrote them and a long letter, and they wrote back and said, come on. And this girl, we put him in the car, and off he went, you know. And
but I B E B E A beat them to the community. The people who you had met who invited you to go, you got a separate ride from them, and then you got there before they got there. So, no one knew who you were when you got dropped off by your ride.
Oh, really? Ooh. I didn't know that. Oh, God, I'm glad I did.
So this person drops Frank off and is ready to pull away, and they're going, whoa.
Yeah. No, I you know, I don't know. I mean, Frank was going.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm in the, I was more or less a domestic scene. I mean, it was a lot going on in the household.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, the best Frank had been the center. And then to go to this commune, because, of course, his desire to communicate, you know, was so strong, you know, forever.
Mm.
And so he was really going for any of these opportunities where he could get out in the world and really communicate.
Yeah.
So, here you are.
We, there, then. A year later, you get a call.
Oh, yeah, my God. I get a phone call from a mutual friend. I forget who it was now. And they said, I thought I saw Frank on
Bell.
The corner. Who was it?
Bell. Is that who you were talking about earlier? Bell, the one that was in the
game. Was it Bell?
Yes.
She called, and it's like, I saw Frank on the street. And I said, are you sure it was Frank? I mean, you know, how ridiculous. And then, of course, he shows up with Debbie at that time.
Yeah.
And here they were again, you know, and obviously doing just dandy. And he wasn't as wobbly anymore either. But, you know, he'd really...
F-E... Sex will do that.
Yeah, do marvels. Yeah, the first time they're there, I go in and he's alone on the toilet. My God, I'm scared to death. You know, you know, no problem. I mean, he was sitting on the toilet, you know.
W O was. You want, you think, your N, U, nude, P, I, pictures, R, E, M, embarrassing, they, we're always taking pictures of Frank on the toilet. I can do a toilet series of Frank for over the years, like the last 25 years on the toilet.
This one house we rented, for the first house I got after I got there was kind of out in the country, and it was lovely, but it was difficult. Like, I didn't want to leave Frank home alone much, and I was driving this big old one-ton truck. So to get him into town, I had to put him in the back of this truck and going up the hill the first time. I go back there, and he's slipping out as I go up the hill. They almost lost him. And anyway, so then I moved into town, and it was a small place, but it was in a, what they call compounds, which would be like a bunch of little apartments all around together. And this... very interesting people living there, too, real alternate society type thing. But the toilet, the floor was, remember the floor around there? It was all kind of rotted out, and to get his chair over it and not have Frank go through the floor with the wheels of the chair. And my God, there were so many people there sometimes. It was at a kitchen and two rooms and a little bathroom. And when we didn't have company and there were only like five of us or six of us or seven of us there, it was like we were home alone or something. But that was good too, because then there were neighbors there too that he were in and out and he could communicate with. And that worked out real well.
Yeah.
We moved several times, didn't we, Frank? My God. All this stuff.
I... W E W R I wrote for The underground paper?
There was an underground newspaper. Northern New Mexico was really getting organized in those days. You know, they had free medical and free boxes and, you know, a lot of stuff was going on good.
Oh. Gio Godfrey?
Yeah, Godfrey was involved. He had this Chicano group. And we did a rent strike.
Tell people who Godfrey is, he's saying.
He was a director who eventually became a director of a film called Koyaanisqatsi that had a Philip Glass score and was very much an anti-technology film. It's about, what? Oh my God, how long ago now? It was very avant-garde, and it's a filmmaker's film, and now it's kind of a classic, a cult film all over the world with groups of people and whatnot. Tremendous influence on film industry, hopefully people's minds.
But then...
He had a Chicano group there.
But the S.A. same G guy, guys who be
before were at the center. Yeah, well, there was a whole history. He had been a monk at the College of Santa Fe and had organized, I guess, back even early 60s or before the whole hippie era happened, a youth group of Chicano kids. And then Godfrey became involved registering voters in the South and became excommunicated as a result of his political action, and was actually with a group called the Weathermen in Chicago, which were pretty heavy-duty revolutionaries.
Yeah.
He came back to Santa Fe then, and with these kids that he had in a youth group, formed this La Gente de la Raza, the people of the race. And the only thing that remains in Santa Fe from that now is the clinic. He brought doctors there. And the whole thing was really going. They got bombed. And that was way before he made the film.
I R O rode with them when they F O
followed.
Followed.
When the cop cars. Well, they did a thing. They got all connected on the police band. Is that what you were talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, where they would interpret a call to the police from the Chicano neighborhood, and they'd get out there and have it solved before the cops got in there. The guys from La Gente would get out there, and the cops would get there, and there's no problem. I mean, Godfrey knew all of these people, and then they got bombed there, you know. It was pretty heavy duty around Santa Fe when Frank and I were there. Now it's yuppieville. It's like a Adobe Disneyland. But
we did A R E N T. A rent?
Yeah, we did a rent strike too. We all marched around the plaza and where I'd moved from the country into this compound, they had evicted Chicano families who'd been there for like 20 years because they could get more money because now we hippies were there. And, we found this out. And, of course, all the hippies are taking out false ceilings and exposing the brickwork and making beehive fireplaces and really tripping the places out. And then, of course, we all got rent increases. And we did this rent strike with them. And at one time, with the La Raza people, Godfrey and these guys, we did the fiesta, which was in the old Santa Fe style, where each compound would open up their doors and invite open house for other people. And that was really gratifying because all we hippies had our doors open and we cooked beans and we had all this ready. And it was a real, we even did this thing with a greased pig, except that the hippies couldn't handle catching the pig and we had to sit and call the pig. You know, we didn't want anything too rough in there. And that was a really good thing and good fun. I mean, there was really good spirit then in northern New Mexico at that time. There were, you know, free stores and we got the first food co-ops going. The first free school was there.
What is a free store?
Yeah, it was where everybody puts things and you put in what you don't need and you take out what you do. And then we got to bulk grains rather than paying Kellogg prices on things.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like what the what were food co-ops, which are now taken over, of course, by the corporations, and the prices are way up.
Yeah.
And the first free school in the country was at Santa Fe, and where it was, you know, a parent involvement and the type of people you really wanted raising your children, you know, the best people, as far as I was concerned. So, you know, we were happy to be a contributing part of that.
How did you get in? How did you get FR from AWI from a wife to.
Did I get from a wife?
From being a wife to what you became, I guess.
Frank, I you know, I think maybe it was those toadstools I ate when I was a little girl. I mean, maybe, I don't know. There was no real change. You know, there never was any real change. I mean, I was very much a juvenile delinquent, if you want to call it that. You know, I was, when I was really quite young, I liked college boys, but I liked the college boys who were into the early Charlie Parker. You know, the first Jazz at the Philharmonic. I was kind of born avant-garde. And when I was a kid babysitting, and I would say, I'm not doing this one.
When was that? When were you born?
I was born in 33,
yeah.
But it was in the late 40s, and when I was a teenager, I was all over the place, and I hated school, of course, but I was really into reading. I mean, I read Spinoza, because I had a boyfriend who was a philosophy major. I can't say I understood much of it, but those interests were there. You know, real early on. And then I went through a whole series of marriages and divorces. I never should have married anyone. But, of course, one did marry then. You know, there were no alternatives. You know, the great American dream, which I had never... When I was babysitting with kids, I said, my God, I'm not doing this. You know. And so my kids went through a whole lot with me through all these changes, of course. But they always knew they were loved, you know.
Were you a B E A beatnik?
Well, in the beatnik time before Kerouac came out with his book, I had at that time I was living adjacent to LA City College. And I met a group of people that lived up by the Hollywood Bowl on Pinehurst. And I really liked this group of people. They were really, Mort Saul was one of them, really intellectual, political people. And I was fascinated. And through Mort Saul coming up, his first big thing was with The Hungry Eye, of course.
Yes.
And so I was really like a little groupie, really, with it. My friend Hank read poetry, and he was a jazz drummer. when, you know, poetry and jazz was mm-hmm. happening and all that. But I was just, really, I was on record. I was into taking all of this in. I liked it. And then, of course, Kerouac's book got popular. And, you know, here we go, you know. All of a sudden, it's beatniks and this and that. And the bus tours come through North Beach like they did later through the Hate. You know, the whole thing's over. The minute it gets publicized, it's over with.
Yeah.
You know, everybody says they're a beatnik or everybody says they're a hippie. Mm. And without any idea of what starts these movements, these are organic things that grow usually from a small group of committed people. And then by the time it hits the press, you know, forget it, baby. You know, it's what's next. You want me to say more about this? You're looking at me.
Yeah, he wants to hear more about
it. You want to hear more about
that
it.
That hungry eye period, and is that what you want? Yeah, be because Mortsal is one of my...
I mean, but I wasn't, you know, I was no contributor to anything during this. I had two kids already. And I'm working a job. It was through friends of mine who were involved that I had, you know, some sort of involvement. It was exciting to me. But, you know, I don't really have too much to say about that, Frank. I was just young and this was happening. And I was very interested, you know, and it was such a nice time, too. I mean, Sunday afternoons we used to go, what was it called, the Purple Onion or someplace where you went downstairs and they had classical music and wine. And then poetry and jazz was happening, and I went there last week with my friend Carlene. And there's the Hungry Eye, and there's a City Lights book, and there was Vesuvius, which I remembered, you know, but... I was so young. You know, I was so young. I didn't know what was happening. It just was fun.
When did you, Kay, and know what was happening?
I still don't know what's happening. What's happening? I don't know what's happening. You know, the things interest you, they get sparkly, and I've usually been pretty much interested in what was on the crest of the wave. You know, that's what's interesting. Instead of the same old thing over and over again or putting a patch on it, let's have something new. Let's have some new ideas. Let's try other things, because I wish I had some new ideas now. I wish somebody had some new ideas, because I think it's a mess. And I'm really glad I'm living in Mexico. And I'm in culture shock being back in this country every time. It's hard on your nervous system, and I'm finding everybody's on Prozac. And they don't change the stress situations. They sell Prozac, you know, and then they... No marijuana, because there's no profit in that one. You know, let's have these tranquilizers and don't change things, you know.